Taptakanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshri Prishubhana Siddhidevi Pranamami Ripriye Vanchakapa Trubhyascha Kripa Siddhubhyevacha Patidara Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shadvaita Vidadhar Shivasini Gaur Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 Read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 19, The Killing of the Demon Hiranyaksha, Text Number 15. Ritne Swa Stule Swa Shule Bahudha
Bahudha
Arina
Arina
Hare
Hare
Pratyetya
Pratyetya
Vistirnam
Vistirnam
Pura
Pura
Vibhuti Manas Pravidha
Pravidha
Rosha
Rosha
Sahaka Katora
Katora
Mushtina
Mushtina
Nadam
Nadam
Prahitya
Prahitya
Ataradhyata
Ataradhyata
Asura
Asura
Rikne swashule bahudharina hare
Rikne swashule bahudharina hare
Pratyetya vishtirna uro vibhutimat
Pratyetya vishtirna uro vibhutimat
Pravridha rosha sakatharor mushtina
Pravridha rosha
Yantara Diyata Sura Ritne Swashule Bahudharina Hare
Ritne Swashule Bahudharina Hare
Prarit Pratyetya Vishtirna Uro Vridutimat
Pratyetya Vishtirna Uro
Pravidharosha sakathora mushtina
Pravidharosha sakathora mushtina
Nandan pravidhyantara diyatasura
Nandan pravidhyantara
diyatasura Vigneswashule bahudharina hare
Vigneswashule bahudharina hare
Pratyetya vistirnam uro vibhutimat
Pratyetya vistirnam uro vibhutimat
Pravridha rosha sa kathora mustina
Pravridha rosha sa kathora mustina
Nadan praritiyan taradhiyatra suraha
Nadan praritiyan taradhiyatra
Vrijne sasure bhavudharina hare
Pratyetya vistirnam uro vibhutimat
Pratyetya vistirnam uro vibhutimat
Pravidha rosha sakathora mushtina
Pravidha rosha sakathora mushtina
Nadam praritiyam taradhiyatha sura
Nadam praritiyam taradhiyatha sura
Pratyetya
sirna uro vibhutimat
Pravidha rosha sa kathora
But by this Srivatsa Mara, the chest of the Lord, he is distinguished from all others. Text number 16. Hit in this manner by the demon, O Vidura, the Lord who appeared as the first war, did not feel the least quaking in any part of his body, any more than an elephant would when struck with a wreath of flowers. Purport. As previously explained, the demon was originally a servitor of the Lord of Vaikuntha, but somehow or another he fell as a demon. His fight with the Supreme Lord was meant for his liberation. The Lord enjoyed the striking on the transcendental body, just like a fully grown-up father fighting with his child. Sometimes a father takes pleasure in having a mock fight with his small child, and similarly the Lord felt Hiranyakshas striking on his body to be like the flowers offered for worship. In other words, the Lord desired to fight in order to enjoy his transcendental bliss. Therefore, he enjoyed the attack. Mam Vishnu Vidayam Krishna Prasthayatate Srimate Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatunde De Gauravana Vicharane Nirvishe Shashini Vadi Paskatya De Sitarana Nigama Kalpatura Kali Tam Halam Sukamukha Dravutam Amrita Samyutam Vibhata Bhagavatam Rasmalayam Ahura Ho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavakaha. O thoughtful men, relish the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the ripened fruit of all the Vedic literature. It was originally spoken by Shukadeva Goswami and has become even more tasteful because of his narrating. And here we get some indication of that the Bhagavatam is meant simply for rasa. And there are five direct rasas, as you know. But the acharyas generally have four. There is the Madhurya rasa, there is Vatsalya rasa, Satya rasa, Dasya rasa, and sometimes Shanta rasa is included as one of the five principal rasas. And then we have things like anger, krodha, bhaya, fear, hasha, rasa, laughter, abhuta, wonder, and others. Ghastliness, vibhata, vibhatsa. Seven indirect rasas. But all of them are rasas. In the material world here, we also have the five direct relationships, just like the floor has a relationship with all of us right now, acting as shanta rasa. And for some of us, the wall has the same relationship with us, supporting us. And we have friendship. Generally it's you scratch my back and I scratch your back and we're friends. And there's also parental dasya rasa. You give the waiter a tip, you go to a restaurant, that's called dasya rasa. And there is vatsalya rasa. Vatsa means calf, and the relationship between the cow and the calf. Very affectionate, out of love for the calf, the cow is giving milk, its own blood, in order to support the calf. So this is the mother or the parental relationship, giving one's very energy or life to support the subordinate, the child. And the Madhurya rasa, Madhu means sweet, like honey. So the sweetest rasa, one of simply spontaneous enthusiasm to please Krishna under any circumstance. Madhurya rasa. So here, as we have in the material world, the same thing. So-called conjugal love, which is not appreciated very much by the Bhagavatam. Matter of fact, the Bhagavatam is meant to expose our so-called our conceptions of reality and put them into some perspective so that we can appreciate the actual reality. Urvam Gachati Sa Urvam Alamadakshakam Ashvatam Prahu Aviyam Jadamsi Yasya Puranani Yasvam Veda Sadeda Vit. That this material world is compared to the banyan tree, with its roots upper and its branches down, and whose hymns are the Vedic leaves. One who knows this tree is a knower of all the Vedas. In other words, the Vedas give us a description of the material world, and they're meant to help one gradually get out of the material conception of life. Of course, most people don't want to get out of the material conception of life. Most people are very much enthusiastic, especially in Kali Yuga, get more absorbed in the material concept of life. They not only have faith that if they can get more money, they'll be happier, but they're anxious to figure out how to get more money somehow or another. And then with that money, they're anxious to spend it more and more on sense gratification. The Vedas, they never encourage that. The Vedas never, there's no part of the Vedas that encourage endless accumulation of wealth for sense gratification. Although apparently the Vedas give some description about the heavenly planets, and they describe all kinds of benefits from performing different sacrifices or austerities and penances, but the idea is that it always has to be done under religious principles. One goes to the heavenly planets not by bribing the doorkeepers of heaven. I've gotten so much money and I'm so rich. Now I can go to heaven and pay a big bribe and they'll let me in. Now, even there was a king, Vrishamrita Muni, he decided that he was going to send this king to heaven. So he sent him to heaven by his mystic power. He got up to heaven and everyone looked at him and said, "How did you get here?" So Indra took him and threw him down. And when he was landing, he called out to Vishwamrita Muni, "Help, they're throwing me out of here." So he threw him back. Threw him back into heaven. They said, "How did you get back here?" Then he took him, picked him up and threw him back down. So needless to say, he was like a ping pong match. He was being thrown back and forth. And finally he was stuck in halfway in between. So Vishwamrita Muni, he didn't know what to do. So he was so powerful, he created his own heaven and threw him into a new heaven. Most of us are not so powerful. But the idea was that you had to be qualified to get to a desirable place. The Vedas, they may offer you better sense gratification, but it wasn't for nothing. It was from becoming qualified. Purify, then one would be qualified to enter into a higher realm. The idea was to give up sense gratification, and then they give you more sense gratification. Give up mental speculation, and then they give you more knowledge. Then you can see what the difference is. But people are not interested in these things, they just want, because they have no information. They have no information that there's a different realm of existence where the same activities that we're performing now can be performed there, but they're blissful. They're full of pleasure. So Krishna comes specifically to show how, in relation to him, everything's possible. But it's fun, because it doesn't appear very much fun to us. This fight between Lord Bohr and Hiranyaksha, and I imagine Hiranyaksha, well, he was in a sporting spirit also. After all, he went around the universe looking for a fight. It wasn't that Lord Bohr just picked a fight with him. Hiranyaksha was walking by and said, Lord Bohr didn't appear any out of nowhere to attack him. He said, "Hey, would you like to fight?" "I've been in Vaikuntha all this time and there's no one to fight with, so I came here. What about a fight with you?" Well, it was Hiranyaksha who was looking around for a fight. He went to Varuna and he said, "Would you like to fight?" So Varuna said, "Well, I'm growing old. It's useless fighting with an old man like me." But luckily, the Vishnu is appearing in the form of a boar. "Why don't you pick a fight on him? And he's so powerful that you're going to lie down on the battlefield and all the dogs are going to come by and eat you. Wouldn't that be nice? Aranyaksha was such a fool that he thought, yeah, wouldn't that be nice? Like, finally there's someone who's actually going to fight with me, and it's going to be a good match. Somehow or another, this is one of the products of the mode of ignorance. When Banasura challenged Lord Shiva, who had given him power, so much power he had 1,000 arms. So no one would fight with him because he was too powerful. But Lord Shiva said, what is the use of fighting with me? That I'm the one who gave you all the benedictions. How can you fight with me? Obviously you're going to lose. So why don't you just wait a little while? If you really want to have a good fight, soon the person will come who will be so powerful that he'll smash you to pieces and your flag of victory will no longer fly. So the demon become afraid after hearing this? No, he became ecstatic. Someone's going to come and finally smash me to pieces. We may wonder, how can anyone have this mentality? But that's the nature of the mode of ignorance. Suicidal. As we can see, as society enters more into the mode of ignorance, they become more suicidal. It's not unusual for people to, younger people, the second cause in America of deaths among teenagers is suicide. And it happens younger and younger as the mode of ignorance develops. By the time they're 5 years old, it's said that, I forget what percentage of the children 5 years old are on Prozac in America. Prozac is a heavy drug that's used for depression. What to speak of other, if other places these drugs were available, I'm sure they'd be utilized also. Radhika Ramana Prabhu was telling me that in India, when you're 5 years old or 6 years old or 7 years old, there's heavy, heavy competition to get into public school. You have to take tests, you have to compete with everyone else to get into public school, into the first grade, second grade, because they have a quota. Too many children, so there's a quota. And those who are higher class and more intelligent, generally, they have only a very small percentage, or some percentage, of the seats in public school. The underclass is less intelligent, they have a much greater percentage, so they get in very easily. They go, you're qualified. You're admitted. But the higher class students, they have to compete with each other to get into, first grade, second grade. They make it in and say, I made it in, I can do finger painting, finally. I'm qualified. Learn A, B, C. Heavy competition. And what to speak of the higher grades. And there are so many students who commit suicide, even in India, because it may not be reported, because 500,000 people die in India, it's not very important. It's just normal. But the point is that in this age of Kali Yuga, people are becoming more and more into the mode of ignorance, and therefore they're becoming more and more suicidal, more or less. And therefore, the quality of understanding, the quality of appreciation for reality is diminishing. So Krishna, he comes and shows that in relation to him, all the different rasas are possible, and that it is all pleasureful. Hiranyaksha went around the universe looking to fight with someone. Finally he met someone, he became very ecstatic. And luckily he met the personality of Godhead. And therefore, although it seems that it is a very bloody, harsh, miserable fight between two people trying to control the world, but actually it's bliss. Krishna is enjoying, as it says here, from a perspective that's very hard for us to understand in the conditioned form of life. How anyone could hit someone or be hit, and it's all pleasurable. But that's the nature of a spiritual body. That's why when Krishna, when he was fighting against Jambavan for 28 days and night, Jambavan was hitting him as hard as he could. Jambavan was hard to understand exactly, because Jambavan said he was old during the time of Lord Ramachandra. Maybe he was using it as an excuse. By the way, Jambavan is not a bear. He's the king of the bears. He's not a bear himself. Srila Prabhupada was asked that, how is it that Satyabhama, who is the daughter of Jambavan, she became a queen of Krishnas? Because after all, I mean, you can't imagine Krishna marrying a bear. Here's one of my principal queens, you know. A little unusual, but we love her anyhow. And here's my little kids, you know. They're not mutants. Their mother is just a little unusual. No, she's not a bear, nor was Jambavan a bear. He was the king of the bears. Of course, Satyabhama wasn't even Jambavan. I guess, not Satyabhama, he was Jambavati. So Jambavati wasn't a bear, and neither was Jambavan. In any case, he was fighting with Krishna. He was strong enough that when Prahara, the brother, had taken the jewel, the Sambhataka jewel, and was displaying it in the forest, riding on the back of a horse, when lion came and killed Prahara, brother of Satyajit, and taken the Sambhataka jewel. Sambhataka jewel is actually the Kaustubha jewel. Long story. In any case, there, and then Jambavan came and found the Prashara and the horse that was killed, and killed the lion. So then he took the jewel into his cave. Krishna was being defamed by Satyajit throughout Dwarka. And then Krishna went looking for the jewel with some of the prominent members of Dwarka, found the dead lion, found the dead horse, found the dead brother of Satyajit, and didn't find the jewel. He traced out the tracks, went into the cave, and found the jewel in the hands of the son of Jambavan. The nurse started to cry out, "Help, help, he's come to take the jewel." Then Jambavan appeared very angry, "You come to take my jewel," and fought with Krishna 28 days, like two hawks fighting each other over a dead body, or like two elephants fighting each other over a mate. And they were fighting with clubs, with their bare fists, striking each other just like iron striking against a mountain, 28 days a night. And finally Jambavan said, "Well, this is quite unusual. Usually, I hit someone once, they're dead. I've hit this person repeatedly for 28 days and nights, and he seems to be enjoying the whole thing." Then he started to realize that this person's not quite an ordinary person. And he said, "Oh, this must be Krishna, my worshipful Lord Ramachandra." And then Krishna realized, and he understood that Jambavan suddenly waking up, and he said, "Don't worry." He said, "I'm enjoying this. You can hit me as hard as you like. There's no problem." Of course, that moment he stopped hitting him and offered his respects and gave him his daughter and the jewel belt. But the point is that it is inconceivable. For Krishna, everything is enjoyable. But for us, who are taking this material world so seriously, who are in the material concept of life, everything is miserable. It is not, and for one who is in Krishna consciousness, then the whole world becomes joyful. Purnam sukha sukhayate. Purnam sukha vishvam purna sukhayate. Prabodhananda Saraswati, he prays that for a devotee, the whole world becomes full of joy. It is only due to our material attachment that things appear to be miserable. Or so-called, and it's all miserable, because even our hankering is miserable, and our lamentation is also miserable. But for a devotee who's on the transcendental platform, who sees it all as one pastime of Krishna, even these horrible things that are going on, they seem wonderful, but not in the way that we may think. In the material world, we think everything is wonderful because I won, you lose. That's wonderful. And I lost, you won. That's horrible. But they understand everything is coming from Krishna, meant to help awaken the living entities back to their original consciousness. It is not that they're not compassionate. It is not that someone comes and says, you know, my daughter died. You go, well, that's wonderful. It is not that the devotee has no compassion. Just like one time, there is Gopal Bhatt and the king, Chanaka. I guess his name was Chatragupta was the king. I forget the name of the king. What's the name of the king in Gopal Bhatt's story? I think it was Chandragupta. So King Chandragupta, one time he went to his Gopal Bhatt, was his more or less comedian, because in the Veda culture, the duties of the king were so heavy, he needed a little diversion. And since everyone treated him so respectfully, therefore sometimes he needed someone to joke with. So he had one jester in the court, and this jester was named Gopal Bhatt. So he went up to Gopal Bhatt and said, Gopal Bhatt, I just had a daughter. What do you think? He said, I feel good, I feel great because I just passed stool. He said, what did you say? He said, I feel great because I just passed stool. So he said, how disgusting. He said, you know, I don't want to speak to you, you know. I just told you something which is so nice and you just tell me this disgusting thing. So one day, at this time the king wasn't speaking to Gopal Bhatt anymore. So one time he said to Gopal Bhatt, because they were in a boat and rowing, so Gopal Bhatt was rowing, the king was sitting there. The king said, quick, I have to pass stool, go to the shore. So Gopal Bhatt was rowing here and there. He said, oh, that's not very good, that doesn't look very safe. And look over there, it looks like maybe some animal was there. He said, quick. And finally he got to the shore, the king jumped out and he came back and Gopal Bhatt said, oh, how do you feel? Oh, I feel so good. So he said, now you see how I feel, how I felt when you asked me. So that's the nature of material experience. Sometimes it's inconceivable how one is experiencing things on a transcendental platform, because we only have mundane experience. But for one who's transcendent, and everything is like that. So-called happiness in the material world is simply the temporary relief from our misery caused by our hankering. And the lamentation is due to the fact that usually that whatever we hankered for, we got, and we lost it eventually, which is inevitable. Everything is, whatever we hanker for, it's inevitable. So we're destined in the material world to suffer hankering, lamentation, until finally we get free from it. Come to the transcendental platform, and in that platform, then everything will be wonderful because Krishna is doing everything to help people get out of this illusion, although people are very attached to it. So as I said, some child may die, we don't say how wonderful. We understand that this person is going to be very disturbed, they won't be able to appreciate it. We say how it is wonderful. In one sense it is wonderful, in another sense their distress that they're feeling is not very wonderful. Therefore people have to be gradually elevated or educated. The Bhagavatam won't be appreciated by ordinary persons. It's meant for those who are paramahansa. We may not be Paramahansas, therefore we hear the Bhagavatam, and we don't always appreciate what's going on. We don't always understand what's going on. Because it's meant for persons who are beyond the material energy. Of course, it's meant for ordinary, not only just ordinary persons, but generally a special class of persons who are not beyond the material nature, but who are pure in heart enough that they don't assume they know everything. They can hear from the right source with the right attitude, and therefore derive some benefit of understanding transcendence. So from the very beginning here, a view of transcendence is being given, which is practically inconceivable to us, but which is very promising. That even in this world full of problems, that we can be happy under any circumstance if we come to the same platform that Krishna is on. Mam karmani limpanti, me karma palis priha, iti mam yobhijananti karma bhiras nasabhadite. There's no work that binds me, nor am I attached to the fruits of my activities. The one who understands this truth also doesn't become bound by the fruit of reactions of work. In other words, our attachment to the results of our work makes us miserable. Although we think it's very important that everything gets arranged very nicely for our happiness and that all our misery is avoided, that everyone has to cooperate for this endeavor, that's called our friends, those who cooperate with me, make sure that I'm happy, my body's comfortable and happy, that all the, as many problems as possible are solved. But in this endeavor, everyone winds up a failure, ultimately. Therefore, the intelligent person learns, while trying to maintain the body for Krishna's service, at the same time learning how to tolerate all kinds of inconveniences, and coming to, so one can come to the spiritual platform, spiritual awareness, spiritual vision, spiritual experience, so that everything does become wonderful. If one sees things in the proper perspective, one can develop the proper activities, which will develop the proper mood, and the proper understanding and mood, one will always be joyful under any circumstance, confident that this has been arranged for me by Krishna. That it's not some horrible thing that beyond God's control, it is not something which is bad for me or bad for anything else. Everything that Krishna does is good. Do you know that story? You know the story in Spanish? Todos que Krishna hace es bueno. You know, that's, everyone knows that story of how the king was in the forest one day with his minister and how his finger got cut off, and then everyone knows that story. So that everything that Krishna does is good. So that confidence we have to develop, if we develop that, then we'll see with a spiritual vision, we'll always take shelter of Krishna, always be inquisitive, under these circumstances, how does Krishna want me to behave to further his interest? If we take shelter of Krishna and try to work for his interest, then the result is that whatever thing we do will also be good. And as soon as we lose perspective on what Krishna's interest is, and forget that that's also our interest, we don't take shelter of his vision, his understanding, his mood, then we wind up taking shelter of the material nature's mood and understanding, and that will always be incomplete and miserable. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
So in the
class,
talking about process.
Yes. Well, rasa is a combination of different factors put together. Sometimes when we talk about rasa, we're thinking that rasa means a particular relationship or whatever. But it's actually a combination of different elements, known as vibhava, anubhava, satvika bhava, vyabhichari bhava, and sthayi bhava. So when they combine together, it's called rasa. But in the absence of one of those elements, it's called virasata. Virasata means incomplete rasa. In Vrindavan, for instance, or in Vaikuntha, you have the say the land or the trees, whatever else, say Krishna's pastime. They may apparently have the mood of, say, Madhurya Rasa, because they're partaking their own Radha Krishna's pastime, they're experiencing it. But they don't have the ability to reciprocate with Krishna in a certain rasa. So that rasa is not fully developed. It's ecstasy, they're experiencing ecstasy, but there's no apparent reciprocation between Krishna and the other elements there. Therefore it's not really considered to be a mature rasa. Although the elements of pleasure and knowledge, some knowledge may be there, but it's not complete. Therefore it's not considered. Rasa has to be complete, to be fully mature. Just like I gave the example, sweet rice means are ingredients of rice, milk, fire, cardamom seeds, and sugar. So those five elements, if one of them is not there, or one of them is incomplete, then it's not considered to be. There may be something like sweet rice, but it's called paya vas. Is that clear? So generally, shanta rasa, the acharyas say, is the all the way up to the servitude, the affection given in the. Sometimes our acharyas say that servitude and affection, without the complete service attitude, as described later on, that's also sometimes not even considered to be rasa. But our acharyas say it's always the basis of rasa. It's the foundation by which rasa will develop. Shanta rasa will go all the way from impersonalism all the way up to personal shanta rasa. But sometimes our acharyas also include it within rasa, sometimes they don't, depending on how they define it. It's technical. Anything else? Yes.
I wanted to say that the rest of Sri Krishna and all our activities and whatever happens is part of Krishna's will. So how can we use astrology and Krishna's service? Because can we really think about the future?
A lot of people don't find any problem using the Krishna's service, or at least using it. How do you use in Krishna's service? Just like when we say everything is Krishna's will, that means that ultimately everything is sanctioned by Krishna. And Krishna sets things up in such a way is that ultimately it's for everyone's benefit. But that doesn't mean that Krishna desires that the thief comes and steals things from him. That's not Krishna's will. Krishna's will is that everyone becomes Krishna conscious, but in the material world he's arranged it that everyone gets what they deserve, according to what they deserve and what they desire. So astrology can tell you, if just like if it's raining outside, you can't stop the rain, but at least you can take an umbrella. If you know it's raining, then at least you can take the umbrella. You won't get wet. You won't be able to stop the rain. At least you can stop yourself from getting wet. So astrology can tell you when it's going to rain, literally. If you're good enough. What the circumstances are, then you can arrange your life accordingly. Krishna will give you the intelligence. And we use it for devotees. It can be helpful because if we're transcendental, we don't really care. I used to have this discussion with some of the devotees that the Prabhupada says in the books, in the third canto, as a matter of fact, that in the marriage of devotees, it's always blissful. So why do we need astrology? Then I point out, the Prabhupada said another point, that because people don't use astrology, therefore this, and they don't match up their mentalities, therefore there's divorce a lot of times. So how do you equate the two? Because we're aspiring to become devotees. We're not so tolerant. Unless things are somewhat comfortable for us, then it's hard for us to, things are too disturbing, it's hard for us to fix our minds on Krishna. Although the one who's very advanced, under any circumstance, they can fix their minds on Krishna. But we're not so advanced, so therefore sometimes we have to make arrangements so that things are at least tolerable for us, that we don't go beyond our capacity while we're performing devotional service, that we become incapable of tolerating the situation. We have to learn a little bit at a time. So astrology is just one of the means. It's not, we only use astrology, we use so many things. We go and we ask our, we read the newspaper, we find out what's going on. We look at the weather report, we ask our friends. There's so many different ways of consulting to find out what's the best thing to do. But the difference is that the astrology is the Ayurveda, so everyone needs to consult with astrology. Out of the six different parts of Vedic knowledge, Shiksha, Vyakarana, that is Shiksha means grammar, meter, logic, whatever. The basic principles to understand the Vedas that you have to acquire, that Jyotish is the eye. So everyone, generally in the Vedic culture, everyone consulted astrologers. Even Krishna consulted astrologers. If you want any argument for astrology, you just have to see that Krishna consulted astrologer. What time to marry Rukmini, what time to marry Satyabhama, when to have the wedding. So Krishna didn't have to consult astrologers, but he did anyhow. Because he tells you the appropriate time to do different things. But when Prabhupada was asked about that, he said, that's alright. So if I had to do everything exactly at the right time, I couldn't accomplish anything. It's very difficult. So it may not be so. For us, we rely more upon Krishna as much as we can. But if it's available and it's accurate, well, we can use it too. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Prajara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Premanande.